It's 1972, and a famed sculptor, Jacques Lipschitz, receives two letters. Both of them come from the same country he's long lost contact with, the country that he has held dear to his heart all his life, even though technically you could say had no connection to, Lithuania. The senders were sculptor Vladas Vildžiūnas and musicologist Vytautas Landsbergis. Although being friends, they unbeknownst to one another simultaneously reached out to Lipschitz, who, before gaining international fame, was born in Druskininkai, then part of the Russian Empire, in 1972, part of the Soviet Union. But for a brief time during the interwar period and historically, a Lithuanian town.
He receives two letters from Lithuania around the same time and takes it as a sign.
Lipschitz has always called himself Lithuanian. Born in a Jewish family in Druskininkai, he considered himself a part of the Lithuanian Jewish community, the Litvaks. Many of them emigrated at the beginning of the 20th century, others fled World War II. Around 200,000 were killed during the Holocaust. Just some of them were left in Lithuania. So the country and the community that raised him was now almost gone, both culturally and politically, repressed under Soviet occupation. But the letters, which he received just a few years before his death, signified a new relationship that made Lipschitz think back to his roots and gave invaluable insights for his Lithuanian colleague, Vladas Vildžiūnas. Two artists, two sculptors, two regimes, and two dangerous identities met through the letters that help us understand the turbulent reality that artists with marginalized identities had to live through in the middle of the 20th century. We're walking in a sculpture garden in a small district of Vilnius called Jerusalem. We're surrounded by dozens of sculptures covered in snow. Kunotas Vildžiūnas, a son of Lipschitz's pen pal Vladas Vildžiūnas, who's also a sculptor, guides us through it. His father opened the garden in the 70s. Then it hosted works of artists who opposed the Soviet regime. Most of them were persecuted. They couldn't get their works displayed in major galleries and would hardly receive any commissions for sculptures in public spaces. But here, in the private garden in the Jerusalem district, they found refuge to create freely. Kunotas says that his father wanted for people who came to his home to forget that they live in an occupied country.
Let's forget it. My parents' wish was to forget that we are living under occupation, if only for a moment.
Art for them was like a small window to the West. Hard to find catalogues of paintings and sculptures, and art magazines gave a peek to the contemporary art scene, many of which were deemed formalist by the Soviets. Nonetheless, contemporary Western sculptors greatly influenced the local scene. The progressive Lithuanian sculptors knew and liked Henry Moore, Konstantin Brankuši, and Jack Lipschitz.
I guess my father just needed these windows to the free world.
In 1972, Vladas Vildžiūnas got a rare opportunity to travel abroad to the sculpture symposium in Hungary. He's got a plan to make his first more abstract sculpture. He calls it Ecce Homo, Behold the Man, in Latin. Traditionally, the scene depicts a scourged Jesus, bound and crowned with thorns, as Pontius Pilate presents him to the hostile crowd. Vildžiūnas's Ecce Homo is a cubistic monumental granite bust, a face with no eyes and no distinct features, one shoulder raised, covering the left cheek.
There he makes the forms of his sculptures very clear. That's what he was trying to achieve: concentration, clarity, and monumental transformation.
But he's looking for a fresh view and turns to his compatriot, an incredibly famous sculptor, Jacques Lipschitz, for advice.
It was probably on a whim that he wrote to Lipschitz, and it's nice that he replied very quickly. The short correspondence happened over 2 years. And the contact between them was very direct. Right away, with no familiarities, they talk to the point.
Iškart kalba apie esmę.
We don't know exactly why Vladas chose to write to Jacques Lipschitz, but he certainly knew that Jacques was born in Druskininkai, not so far from his own birth town. Jacques was born in 1891 as Chaim Jakob Lipschitz in a pretty rebellious family. Aushra Rozhankevichutye, who works at the Lipschitz Memorial Museum, tells a story of his parents eloping from their families.
Jacques Lipschitz was born in a pretty secular family. There's an interesting detail in his biography. His parents made a very unusual decision for the small-town Jews that they were. They got married against Jacques Lipschitz's grandparents' will. His parents on the mother's side were interested in the possible groom. For them, he was rich enough, but not religious enough. And it shows a very strong moral and ethical orientation of Lipschitz's grandparents. It shows the influence of modernity that was already reaching the Jewish communities, even from smaller towns,
shtetls.
After running away from their parents and secretly marrying, Jacques' parents moved to Druskininkai, a famous quiet resort town known for pine forests surrounding it. His father worked as an engineer, but had innovative ideas. Later, Jacques called him an architect without a degree. He may have been inspired by his father, or just playing when he started to make his first little sculptures at an early age.
The first sculptures were his toys that he spray-painted in white. He said that, like most children his age, he liked to fish in Amunas River. He was a very lively, mischievous child. School didn't really interest him much. But he liked playing with toys and making compositions out of them. He had an artistic flair at a very early age.
Lipschitz writes in his autobiography that there were no sculptors in Druskininkai, but for some reason he couldn't analyze, he still modeled constantly. Later, his family moved to Białystok, but fled to Vilnius soon after, because in Białystok, pogroms against Jews were becoming more frequent and it was getting unsafe to stay there for a Jewish family. In Vilnius, Lipschitz studied business under the influence of his father, but he also attended classes at the famed Vilnius Art School and explored the city with the eye of a young artist.
He wandered through Vilnius churches and there, looking at the Baroque churches of the city, studied sculpture. He was incredibly fascinated by the Church of St. Peter and St. Paul, that white interior. And he says, as a young man, just as when I was a child, I had an idol of beauty, and it was white sculpture.
And walking through Vilnius, Jacques was considering dropping out of the business school and, encouraged by his teachers, running away to Paris to study art.
He left to Paris secretly from his father because he knew that father wouldn't agree. But his mom became an ally. Trying to help, she gave him her earrings with diamonds. Well, at least that's the story. He went to Paris with nothing but a pair of earrings gifted to him by his mother. His father got very angry and did not support him because of that. He thought that the prodigal son would come back home. He'll tramp for a little and come back home. Well, it really was a year of the lean cows for him, as he later remembers so vividly.
When he went to Paris, the contrast of living in a small Lithuanian village to the enormous metropolis that was Paris at the beginning of the 20th century hit him hard.
When he came to Paris, just like a lot of emerging artists who didn't have the money, he lived in La Rouge, Montmartre, where more than 80 artists had their studios. Constantin Brancouche was his neighbor. Getting to know Le Corbusier gave him an idea to move to Boulogne, the district of Paris that's full of forests. I think that longing for a pine forest, for Druskininkai pine forest, was also a very important factor in his choosing where to live in Paris.
Manau, kad to pušino ilgesys buvo labai svarbus veiksnys ten pasirenkant gyvenamą vietą Paryžyje.
While in Paris, he spent time with all the glitterati of the Parisian art scene.
Lipschitz was an incredibly open, talkative, communicative person. The saying that you don't need money if you have friends really proved to be true in his case. Because of the connections with Amadeo Modigliani, with Coco Chanel, these were the people he created his first sculptures and busts for, also Pablo Picasso.
Pablo Picasso,
it was the creative bohemian of Paris, which he joined very quickly and became, as he says, Benjamin de Cubist, the Cubist youngster.
Living there, his identity started to shift, says Aušra Rožankevičiūtė.
As he later wrote in his memoir, his cosmopolitan identity was very important to him. He understood himself as a cosmopolitan artist. He didn't care much about his roots or national identity. He was an artist who traveled a lot, hung out with Bohemia. And he remembers that if at first he would find the chance to speak Yiddish, later it was almost entirely replaced by French.
But with years, his understanding of the world shifts, and the world itself is shifting.
A return to his roots was driven by other factors too, such as his parents' death in the 20s. It was followed by a clear understanding that the knowledge and the moral direction that his father gave him is very important to him. Also, the radicalization in Europe, anti-Semitic ideas promoted by the Nazis taking power. Lipschitz writes that if until then I was more interested in the form of sculpture, now I'm getting interested in the idea that it tries to convey. Because now I understand myself not only as a man and sculptor, but also as a Jew. I have to identify with my nation that is being persecuted. I can't stay aside.
Ne tik kaip vyrą, kūrėją, bet kaip ir žydą. Ir aš turiu tą patinti su savo persikėjimą tauta. Aš nebegaliu likti nuo šaly, tai yra metamas iššūkis ir jam taip pat.
Rising antisemitism that he sadly felt even among his friends in the Paris artistic bohemia challenged his understanding of art.
Ir savo draugų, kai kurių iš Paryžiaus kūrybinės bohemos, na tos, kuria jis bendravo aplinkoje.
In the 1930s, the attitude towards Jews in Europe was getting more and more hostile. In 1933, Adolf Hitler was appointed Chancellor of Germany.
He immediately became political and thought that he, as an artist, had to challenge the situation that was happening in Europe. In 1937, at the Paris World's Fair, he presented a sculpture titled Prometheus Strangling the Vulture. It was a very interesting interpretation of the Greek myth.
Iš tikrųjų labai tokia įdomi antikinio mito interpretacija.
We know that according to the myth, the god sentences the light-bearing Prometheus and an eagle eats his liver every day as a punishment.
Ir kasdien atskrendantis erelis turi lesa jo kepenis, reiškia bausmė.
Lipschitz takes a different approach. His Prometheus fights against the evil. He wrestles with an eagle, tries to strangle it, but an eagle in the sculpture has a firm grip on his side.
Kova, nors erelis toje skulptūroje stipriai įsikabinęs, drasko jo šonus, ir ta skulptūra pelnė.
The sculpture won a gold medal in the Paris World's Fair, but it got a strong response from radicalizing intellectuals, the so-called far right, sympathizing with the Nazi ideology. Had degenerated from Auguste Rodin into Bolshevik art, because the sculpture was understood very straightforwardly, as if Prometheus is a Bolshevik strangling Nazi symbol, an eagle. These publications influenced the Paris administration's decision to take down the sculpture after the exhibition.
Ir iš tikrųjų tie pranešimai padarė įsaką ir Paryžiaus administracijai, ir skulptūra buvo demontuota.
In 1940, Germany occupied France and Lipschitz escaped the Nazi regime and went to the United States. In 1941, the Nazis invaded the Soviet Union, in which, at the time, was Druski Ninkai. During their rule, around 200,000 Jews were murdered in Lithuanian territory, and Jacques was worried about his relatives back home.
His parents died earlier, before the Holocaust in Lithuania. When it was happening, his sisters were in Russia. Only the 9-year-old daughter of his sister, who died of tuberculosis, was left in Druski
Ninkai. Nuo tuberkuliozės sesers mergaitė 9 metų ir būtent
the niece, along with most of the Jewish community of Druskininkai, became a victim of the Holocaust.
Kartu su didžiąja dalimi Druskininkų žydų bendruomenės tapo holokausto auka ir
all his life Lipschitz regretted that he was not able to take the girl with him to Paris in time and then later to the US.
Į su savimi, reiškia, į Paryžių išsivežti paskui Jungtinės Amerikos valstijas.
For a while, Jacques could live safely in the United States. There, he was popular as a sculptor, promoting, even starting a new wave of Cubist sculpture. But it seems that it wasn't where his heart was. In the 60s and 70s, he and his wife every summer left the United States and went to Italy, and later stayed there permanently. It is around that time that he receives these two letters from his homeland. The director of Vilnius Jerusalem Sculpture Garden, Laura Vildžiūnienė, says that later they tried to understand why exactly sculptor Vladas Vildžiūnas chose Lipschitz to seek advice from.
He didn't know him at all. Vladas mentioned that, well, I just got an idea and I wrote to him. He wanted some kind of communication, a look from the free world. Because being closed here, having almost no influences from the outside, it was difficult to check if what you were doing is any good.
When Lipschitz received the letter from Vildžiūnas, he replied almost immediately.
It's obviously heartwarming for an artist when such a famous sculptor calls you talented. He acknowledges Vlad's talent and Lithuanians in general as talented in sculpture. But he says, talent is not enough. There has to be hard work.
Jack asks Vladas to send him some pictures of his works and of Lithuanian vernacular sculpture, which Jack remembers from his youth.
He was very fascinated by chapels and crosses along roadsides. In the letters to Vladas Vildžiūnas, he says that Lithuanian traditional sculpture is unique. And now, as we know, Lithuanian traditional cross-crafting has been included in the list of intangible heritage by UNESCO. Lipschitz was one of the first to notice that Lithuania can have a unique voice in sculpture.
But, he says, Vladas is too focused on his roots, searching for his national identity. What's more important, Lipschitz writes, is finding the universal material that would not be overpowered by identity searching.
He
gave advice to Vladas Vildžiūnas.
Jis davė tokį patarimą, kad šaknis labai svarbu.
He said, roots are very important, but you shouldn't get stuck on them. Don't look back, only forwards.
It's easy for someone in the West to say, the roots are always with you. But they're cutting ours. Lipschitz, of course, ran away, in a way also with his roots trimmed, but they were cutting our roots. We were cornered.
Kunotas Vildžiūnas, Vladas's son, says that even though Jacques Lipschitz himself survived having his identity threatened, he couldn't fully understand what roots and folk art meant for people in an occupied country. It meant continuity. It was a political fight against the eradication of common history.
Looking back to Lithuanian folk art was not forbidden. It was a small keyhole through which we and the artists of that period could sort of come out, and they used it well. Artists who are trapped by the system or the situation, I think sometimes they work more purposefully and have nothing to be distracted by. Now we understand that it's not easy to live in freedom, not easy to remain yourself and not to give in to commercialism. We can see that Lipschitz was pressured by it, because the collectors pressured him to constantly make more and more works. But the artist just wants peace and concentration.
Resilience probably could be the word connecting both artists. It's the common feeling they and their sculptures shared. Not fragile, not brittle, made from materials that can withstand enormous pressure. It seems that their communication could have lasted for a long time, and maybe after the collapse of the Soviet Union, they could have met in person. But Jack Lipschitz died in 1973. In a span of 2 years, Vladas and Jack exchanged an unknown number of letters, around 5 or 6, or maybe more. Some of them could be lost. In 1977, Vladas Viljunas got a rare opportunity to go to the United States himself. His son Kunotas says that the way Jacques spoke about his homeland influenced Vladas' thinking greatly.
In letters, Lipschitz says that he feels like he's been homeless for 60 years. Maybe that helped my father when he went to US. They offered him to stay and he said no, despite being promised an enormously successful career. Maybe seeing what Lipschitz went through, how difficult it was for him, in a way helped my father understand that it might not be the best way. On the other hand, when he came back to Lithuania, he significantly intensified independent sculptural life. That period was very interesting.
During the same trip to the US, Vladas and Jacques finally met, albeit not in the flesh. Both of their sculptures are now in the Franklin D. Murphy Sculpture Garden in Los Angeles. Jacques Lipschitz's Baigneuse, or Bather, and Viljunas's The Bird Goddess stand not so far from each other, in the same garden.
It's very beautiful that they met in the same park and now stand there forever.
This documentary was produced by Adoma Zubia at Nara and presented by John Beecham. Additional voiceover by Vaida Pilibaititje, Vita Licitje, and Karolis Pilipas Jutkevicius.